Mr. Lawson was spot on when he said we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, but while I don't have a check for you, Mr. President, I am not giving you a bill for the $150,000 that we've spent to date on this, so I hope that counts as my contribution to the greatness of the Sussex County. But I do want to acknowledge the staff that's with me today. Again, they've just worked really, really hard on this. And with me is Drew Boyce, our Director of Planning. Any handsome. Mark Cote and Bill Brockenbrough from our Development Coordination Section. I think you're very familiar with them.
They're handsome, too.
They are very handsome. They're all handsome. That's one of the qualifications of being to work at DelDOT.
Wow.
Sometimes pretty sexist.
Well, if I said that.
So, and also we have Bruce Allen, Jay Gerner, and Jared Kaufman from our Regional Systems Planning Section. Very, very happy to have all of them with us today. So, as you said, we've been working very hard behind the scenes on working on this very important transportation improvement district. Some of the objectives that we are going to talk about today is we have been working with folks and stakeholders and several of you on the council. We're going to talk about some of the boundary changes, some of the existing conditions, the service standards, which is going to be an important factor moving forward, land use projections, and one of the things that was requested is talk about the funding mechanism for how the TID would work. So back in August when we were in front of you, this was the map that we had proposed. Since then, like I said, we've had some conversations with several of you as well as some additional folks, including the city of Lewis. We met with the mayor briefly and intend to meet in front of their council, I believe, sometime next month to talk about their potential TID. So this is what we're looking at right now. As you can see, we're recommending the boundary that come up to meet the city boundary in terms of facilities where the district monies could be spent. We've added Gills Neck Road and another piece of Savannah Road. And again, not that it doesn't need to have, we don't have need to have this conversation with the council today, but it does appear that the city of Lewis should have their own standing TID. Their needs are slightly different, so we're working through that with them. Our thought is also we're a little concerned isn't the right word, but what's happening on Beaver Dam Road with the extension of the sewer, we would also like to recommend that we take a look at that and potentially have that be its own additional TID, and we can work those two in concurrency with each other. So, but this is what we're looking at right now. A quick few facts about the district as it's currently drawn and what you're looking at. 69 intersections, 21 with signals and 48 without signals, 114 road segments totaling about 66 miles. Of those road miles, about 37 are within the district boundary and about 29 miles are outside it. The total area of the participating properties inside the red boundary is about 17 square miles. Now, I know we went over this with you before, but the reason for reviewing the intersections outside the boundaries is because what happens inside of the district could impact those intersections as well. So some of the existing conditions, when we left, you guys gave us marching orders. I think you specifically, Mr. Cole, said, march your butt back up to Dover and come back with some, I believe those were the words, right? March your butt.
Roll the tape.
And the request was valid. You wanted us to take a snapshot of what the intersections and the current condition look like before you could start working on your land use planning, and that makes a ton of sense. So we did that. Our biggest task was to quantify the existing 2016 conditions in the proposed district, and we did that in two different ways. First, we looked at the intersection congestion at the three peak hours, weekday morning and evening, and on summer Saturdays. The weekday condition we looked at was average weekday, typical of April and October. Then we looked at the roads connecting and intersections, how wide the lanes were, whether there were shoulders and how wide those were, and their sidewalks. So those are the existing conditions that we looked at. So the effort regarding the intersection congestion involved assembling counts from previous traffic impact studies and other planning efforts in the area, counting traffic at the remaining intersections in the area, and adjusting the older counts to reflect the 2016 conditions and analyzing them to identify locations where long queue lengths and locations with poor levels of service. So the long queue lengths we defined as places where one could expect a queuing, turning traffic to back up through at least once during the hour studied. So the level of service, and I think most of you are familiar with this, it's the six different levels describing how a transportation facility such as an intersection operates in terms of A through F. At an intersection, it's calculated separately for each movement, each lane grouping. However, to make for ease of, digestibility, we average those per intersection. So that's what you're looking at here, those different levels of service. So what we are calculating in to determine level of service is the amount of time that vehicles are delayed to having to pass through the intersection to keep the amount of information manageable. Again, we averaged those different movements. So, and this is what we came up with. In weekday and summer Saturday peak hours, about 50% of the intersections have at least one approach operating at service level D or worse. And on Route 1, about 90% of the intersections do. So to really get a good snapshot, we've actually pulled out the Route 1 intersections, and you get a much clearer picture of the intersections. And once you've done that, as you can see on the chart, only about 25% of them are at D or worse in the morning peak hour, rising to about 35% in the evening peak hour, and about 40% on summer Saturdays. So while level of service D is not the end of the world, it's not entirely bad. In an urban setting like we're looking at here, it's probably one of the best achievable locations. But it is an indication that future improvements are needed. So also, as you might expect, most of the problem intersections are concentrated on arterials and collector roads, but not all the local roads are in good shape with regard to congestion. So we studied all of these intersections, and I think you guys have this electronically. If not, we brought hard copies with us of all of the detailed the data on all of the intersections. And we have hard copies we can leave. But it's still a little bit confusing on, of taking a look at those different intersections and what that actually means. So we were able to just to give you a snapshot. This map shows the Route 24 corridor and a few other intersections at the southeast corner of the district during the weekday evening peak hour. So what you're looking at, the squares are intersections with signals. The circle, what?
Squares,
you totally threw me off.
Sorry. Squares are intersections with signals, and triangles are the intersections that are unsignalized, so stop control on the side streets.
Oh, no, you just keep on going now. You started it.
So we have these. So this is a snapshot of actually what's in the existing conditions report. And so the way that we've broken it down is to give you a color code indication of the intersection health. So if you see green, that means that all of the approaches are C or better, and the overall intersection level of service is C or better. So that's hardly any delay as you approach those intersections. So if you look at yellow, would only be indicated on signalized intersections, and that's where the overall level of service for the signal is C or better, but one approach has a longer delay, either D, E, or F. And then red is the overall intersection level of service is D or worse, and then what's driving that is one or more of those approaching legs is D or worse.
Keep going. That's what you get.
So in the existing conditions report, we also looked not only at levels of service, but also the elements of the existing road segments. So in this particular slide, we gave you a snapshot of existing lane conditions and widths. And so when we looked at what is reasonable, what this graphic shows are roads that have lane widths less than 11 feet are indicated in red, and those greater than 11 feet or 11 feet and greater are shown in green. And I think the map is indicative of the, obviously the existing conditions. We see that the local roads are pretty substandard. They're more narrow and would need improvements. We notice that our collectors, arterials, our major collectors, or the higher type roads have adequate lane widths and are functioning or at least meet the standard.
Mr. President, may I just real quick?
Sure.
I'm going to have to ask a question. So. But for the general public and also for myself, but I mean, 11 feet, does that mean what? Two lanes with no shoulders, no bike paths? I mean, or what does 11 feet, what is the distance? What does that mean significantly?
So the 11, so this is not indicative of shoulder width at all. So this is the width, either on an unstriped road, it would be the overall width of the roadway divided by two. Or if the road has striping, it's the width of the actual travel lane that's striped. So this doesn't, this graphic does not indicate shoulder width. However, in the existing conditions report, there's also a graphic. It's just a snapshot of lane width. We also have a graphic on shoulder width that then provides information on the adequacy of the shoulders. And again, what you'll see is a lot of the local roads, you'll see them red, where it's insufficient shoulder width. On a lot of the higher type roads, 24, SR1, 9, there is adequate shoulder width, so you'll see those as green.
No, it's fine. So, you know, service standards, I like this slide because it's what is success? And this is where we need to work together to determine what those particular standards are and all of, defined in all of those different terms. And just to give you some things to consider, you know, we just talked about the 11-foot lanes. If we're going to be doing that, that means widening roads, a significant amount of roads, and we need to know if that's something, are there areas that you guys don't want us to do that? That's something that we need to hear from you. Same thing with, like, it doesn't include draft signal design, but for example, when we met with the city of Dover for theirs, they wanted to use mast arms to replace span wires. Is that something that you care about? Just some things to consider. Also, our complete streets policy, you know, is do you want something like that or do you want something stronger? Those are decisions that we need to have a conversation and work together. We are providing you with a draft set of standards for your consideration that we have proposed. But again, it's just a draft, something for you to consider. And now our regulations require that there be public involvement, of course, and we've been talking about this with you since the beginning. And we'd like to suggest that the council refer to our draft planning and zoning commission for public comment for their consideration and that ask the commission to provide you with that recommendation. And we're happy to assist them in going through that process. So one of the things we were also asked to talk about is the land use and how traffic is a function of that. So Drew's going to walk us through that as well as some of the funding mechanism examples that we have from other TIDs.
All right. So not only do we need to know what standards you like on the roads, but also what that land use adjacent to the roads is ultimately going to be. We have travel demand models that we use for regional planning. But they're not refined enough to be able to get down to the kind of the nuances that we need to be able to develop a transportation plan that can support the growth that that the county is anticipating within the TID boundary. And so we have the ability to do that more refined analysis. It's called a parcel-based traffic analysis or a parcel-based travel demand analysis. But what we need are what those parcels are actually going to grow up to be. What the county through the use of your comprehensive plan, through the use of planning to be able to say what intensity of use that'll then turn into trips that are actually going to be generated from those uses. Those trips spill out onto the transportation system, and then we can determine what the transportation system needs to grow up to be able to support those trips. And so we're willing and ready to go through that process. What we need from the county is that forecast, obviously supported by the comprehensive plan. And basically it's what do we expect land uses in and near the district, to how we expect them to change between now and 2040, which is our horizon year. So what changes do we anticipate between now and 2040 in the land uses in and around the TID? We've been working with Ms. Cornwell in the Office of Planning in the regard, and we with Todd and other staff here at the county, with limited support from us, we think her office could develop the forecast within 3 months. So we would want the planning and zoning obviously to be involved in a review of that process. And depending on how much we wanted to make that public, that could take longer, obviously, than council approval. So what we're asking today is that in an effort to continue the process, that you support the Division of Planning or the Office of Planning to develop those forecasts for us. Like I said earlier, once we have those the service standards developed and the parcel-based forecasts from the county, then we can work on identifying what improvements are needed to make the roads in the district adequate for handling those projections.
I have a quick question, if I may.
Yes, sir.
You mentioned that you could put together with some limited support from your staff, you know, traffic counts, I guess, or projected traffic counts, I guess, in 90 days. There's something, a report, I guess, that would...
Right, that would...
That's our ask of you.
That was our ask of you. That's your office. So in working with your staff, they feel that they could provide those land use projection estimates to us in about 90 days.
Okay. And that's what we're, that's our ask today, is for you guys to direct them to start that effort.
So in the end, I mean, just, again, so I have a full understanding of what we're talking about here. I mean, it's traffic count, a projected traffic count for a projected land use plan.
No, we've got the traffic count.
Yes, so what you would be giving to us is that land use plan. From that land use plan, we would then generate the traffic that's going to be generated from those proposed uses. So you're basically going to be looking at, within the district, any vacant land, obviously, that could potentially develop, what could it be? And then you know, you also have an opportunity to look at any underdeveloped land that may repurpose itself within that horizon year window from now to 2040, and what could those maybe parcels be used in a higher and better use. So that's what we would, that's what we're asking.
Yeah, that's the parcel level forecast that we need from you guys.
So I guess that's the part that I'm a little confused with, but I would, you know, if the staff is going to project, you know, a land use plan, if you would, and but I mean, very potentially conflict with what happens with planning and zoning when they have an application, or even this council's vote, as it relates to, because the staff does not make the decision on land use plans. It's the planning and zoning recommendations in this council. So there's the part that I'm, you help me with the disconnect there. So right. if they're supposed to provide a projection of what could be, or what could be, and how that could relate to something very different as it relates to when things are actually applied for and voted on with planning and zoning in this commission, in this council. So help me with that little disconnect.
Right. So what we would do is ultimately this is going to have to culminate in an agreement between the state and the county. And we could create some framework within that agreement to kind of establish those protocols. Right now what we have is that if you come in and you develop consistent with the land use plan that was originally envisioned from the TID, then you can just move right in and you progress through. It's kind of a pay and go. So you don't have to do the traffic impact study if you develop consistent with the plan. If you're not consistent, if you want to do something different than what was contemplated, then we have to see how that fits in the plan. And so at that point, you are you're subject to the full TIS process and your own evaluation of your impact to the system, and then you're
like
kind of on
right.
kind of on your own.
Correct.
to mitigate
no.
to
yeah.
mitigate all of those impacts from your development. So if you develop consistent, it's more predictable.
Right.
As a developer coming in, I know exactly what I am obligated to pay as far as transportation infrastructure. You know, when you get into the TIS process, it's kind of a wait and see, and you're not too sure exactly what those outcomes would be.
But I think to your point, there's nothing prohibiting the Planning and Zoning Commission and this council voting for things outside of the TID. That's still, it doesn't restrict that at all.
And we can revisit it as well. An example from Westtown is that we had specific land uses identified in the plan. They had some economic opportunities to bring in some larger businesses that weren't consistent with the plan. And what we did was we went back and worked with the town of Middletown to go back and redo the traffic study to see what the impact of those, you know, if they said, okay, we want to take this area now because of the economics and the climate right now is leading us in this direction. Can we effectively change that, and how is that going to impact how the roads are going to grow up? So we went through that analysis, and we determined that our original transportation plan could support those different land uses. And so they were able to, again, kind of changed that master land use plan. The transportation system was still good, So that was kind of a good ending to the story. If in fact the transportation study showed that the transportation plan couldn't support it, then we would be in a different situation where that developer would then be on their own to then invest in that transportation system to make it grow up to be able to support the development.
Okay.
And part of this arrangement could also be that, like we do with this land use plan, we're required every 10 years to update it. Is there any requirement to take the TID and over X number of years we revisit it? Or, you know, once it gets adopted, are we stuck with it for indefinitely? Because things change so much and maybe the trends change, whatever. So is there something that...
I'm sorry, Dan. Is there something in these agreements we draw up that would maybe have a way that we revisit it?
Could.
Because we have different elected officials, or maybe, and you may be gone and all this other stuff. I said may.
Right. One of the things forever that's standard in our regulation is that we are required to do a monitoring report. So
right.
So every so often,
right.
2, 3, 4 years, we're going to set that horizon. We'll do we'll kind of recount the intersections, and so we can kind of keep our finger on the pulse of the health of the system, make sure that we are constructing the capital projects in the right areas. As development continues to happen in different areas of the TID.
Well, it would be good, but I just would rather see, as elected officials come and go, that you all get together again like this and reevaluate things, like say in 10 years or something, or 15 years, whatever it takes.
That could be part of the agreement. Yep.
Yeah, I just think that would be very better for the whole process,
right,
to keep it updated.
So once we get those land use projections, then we develop the transportation plan. So what are the roads going to look like? How many lanes are they going to have, shoulders to be able to support the proposed anticipated development that's going to happen between now and 2040? We'll be in a position to bring on some hired help for us to be able to develop those concept plans. And then with those concept plans, we can develop engineering estimates that will then give us that base figure of what is the total cost of the transportation improvements within the transportation improvement districts. It's kind of a mini capital plan just for the TID itself. So we're going to have a list of roads. You see the all of the road segments that we have in the district. All of those intersections will have projects and plans, concept plans to how those are going to grow up. So once we have those costs developed, then we can begin a process to working out exactly how we are going to assign those overall costs. Obviously, the public has some responsibility, and then the private development community will have a responsibility. One thing I did want to say is that once we develop those concept plans, obviously we'll be working with your planning folks and planning and zoning and the council to be able to review those and so that you have eyes wide open understanding of what those roads are going to grow up to be. Some of them are going to go from potentially from two lanes to four lanes. We already have some of those projects in the capital. Some will stay the same, just two-lane roads, and we'll be able to support the anticipated growth. So once we're in agreement on the overall projects, the total cost, we need to agree to a funding formula. And so how much will the TID fund? How much will come from the state? And so...
And one other point to that is I know that there's a lot of conversations going on beyond the county, but you know, we do have a new president whose objective is to create a lot of new infrastructure. So what kind of communication are you having with the feds as it relates to that, and how could this impact the TID and beyond?
So actually, that's a really good question. I have my Washington briefing actually next week. The one thing that we are seeing with the incoming president's $1 trillion infrastructure investment is a focus on public-private partnerships. It won't have any impact on our TID. The impact that we're hoping that it has is additional dollars, federal dollars flowing into the states. But again, this president is really focused on the public-private partnerships. We are doing one of our first public-private partnerships up in Wilmington, a parking structure Center/Transit Hub right above the train station. The good news for Delaware is that we already have legislation that will enable us to be able to jump on that money and use it quicker. But as far as the TIDs goes, I don't anticipate any impact to the TID process.
So is there a way to allocate by percent? Perhaps, you know, the councilman here, of course, delivered this county to Mr. Trump, our president. So because we got more votes here, do we get more money? By chance, from the feds, as it relates to our infrastructure?
Is this a real question, or is this just...
That's not a real question.
Okay.
No. What he'd like you to do is take me with you to Washington. I might have some influence.
I guess truth be told, I know we all know that there is, we perceive that there will be more dollars coming from the feds as it relates to the infrastructure.
They can print it.
So we do have
a separate discussion. But the reality is that that has to be part of the dialogue. I would think based on those expectations.
So in the way it could if we have a TID in place and there's additional funding into our capital transportation plan, then the projects that are in the, like Drew was saying, that are in the TID that have been prioritized, they'll move faster. I mean, that's just the nature of it. And those outside will not.
So in order to determine how much money the state's going to have to bring to the table, how much the developers are going to have to bring to the table, we'll develop a fee schedule. And that is it's basically taking the overall cost of the projects. So that could be $100 million, $200 million, $300 million. We don't know yet until we get those land projection forecasts, be able to figure out what the roads are going to be able to grow up to be, and then apply the dollars in engineering cost estimates to get those dollars. Once we have that, then we'll determine exactly the share of that the developers and the community can bear. And really, we want to make sure that the TID stays competitive. I mean, there's certain things that we want to make sure that happens. So we got to stay competitive. We want to make sure that folks find it attractive to be able to develop in the TID. And so we want to make sure that those things are that we set a fee structure that induces that type of growth. As we bring more transit service down into Sussex County, we want to make sure that things are nice and tight and we're able to serve this expanding community within the TID well. And so if we can get growth in the TID, that's going to help us with our transit service. So the bottom line is to try to find that right balance where it's predictable, where it's palatable, and where we can make sure that we're not forcing development somewhere else by virtue of the TID.
And this mechanism, I presume it will be totally, we will have the public's input and they will be very involved in that process, I presume?
Yes, we'll be working with planning and zoning, with some developers within the area. An example that I'm getting ready to go through, I'll kind of talk through the process to kind of give you a flavor of how it went in Southern Newcastle County, which is our most recent example. So talking about Southern Newcastle County, this is a chart. On the left side, you'll see all of the transportation projects. So those represent road improvement projects that are within the district. You can see that the 2015 cost estimate and right-of-way costs add up to about $88 million. So we've got about $88 million of total investment to bring the roads up to a standard that's going to support the development. And you can see for this particular example, we split the costs 50-50. So contributions coming from development within the TID represent about $44 million, and the public's investment is $44 million as well. So we've tried to keep that that 50-50 balance through the process. This is a chart, probably hard to see on your graphic, but it represents the actual fee structure that was developed. And so to Councilman Arlett's question, in this particular district, we had a lot of existing development that was like right on the cusp. So we knew what was going to happen with a lot of the parcels. In the Henlopen TID, we're not too sure exactly what's going to happen with a lot of the parcels. They're not actively pursuing development. They're kind of just waiting and seeing. And so when When we developed this, we worked with these developers to determine what was reasonable and rational as far as a fee structure that they could support. They felt that they had a lot more capacity for impact fees on residential rather than commercial or industrial or institutional. And so we were able to structure rates that made those pieces of the economic development within the TID marketable and still competitive. And so those are the types of discussions that we had with developers in order to find that right balance in order to get to the $44 million. One thing you'll notice at the very bottom, we have other lands. So basically, these were the vacant parcels that nobody was developing on. So that of the $44 million, that constitutes about $7.5 million of the of what we anticipate will come when those parcels or when those property owners decide to move with development.
Clarification, the contributions is private sector.
Yes.
Correct. Del Dot, but that also includes, your numbers also do include contributions from or grants from the feds. Is that correct?
Potentially. It depends on the project.
I guess, you know, for full disclosure, I would love to see that as separate columns. I mean, if need be, or just somehow.
So far, our investments have all been state dollars in this particular TID. And one of the things that we realize is that, you know, it's kind of build it and they will come. Like, who goes first, the chicken and the egg, development, roads. What we did in Southern Newcastle County was we made the first step. We put out a couple projects, got a little bit ahead of the ball that allowed development to then progress. And so then the cash is coming in on their side. But so far, we've invested, I'm going to say, about $8 million of state dollars only. And then the next project, and we have about $3 million that we've collected that will pay the 50-50 for the next project. So we realize that we want to try to honor that distribution or the split between public and private. But we realize that we're going to have to be the synergy that kind of gets those first couple projects going. And when we look at this TID, we've got a lot of investment. I mean, we're looking at two major projects on 24 that that are in the program right now that are dualizing 24 up to a point. And we're hopeful that those, when we get through this analysis and we look at the 2040 design, that those roads will still have the capacity to be able to handle what the TID is going to grow up to be. So when we look at things like that, we're already moving down the road with those initial investments within the TID.
And to Drew's point, I want everyone to be perfectly clear that we are more than willing and able and committed to do the same thing down here that we did in Southern Newcastle County with the, you know, the 24 projects being that a perfect example. Again, we're ready to go.
And how about when again, over time, mm-hmm. costs change, prices of material go up and everything? How much flexibility do you have to change these? So, you know, like I said, 10 years from now, these numbers might be way out of line. And the taxpayer may be, you know, on the hook for a greater portion of that.
So what we have a specific infrastructure agreement with each of these landowners. So as they come on and they develop within the TID, we enter into an actual agreement with them that establishes the fee structure. Within that agreement, there are escalation clauses. Right. So we escalate the fee by the CPI. For construction.
Okay, you have a formula somewhere.
Every year.
That's good.
Right.
Okay.
So it's based on CPI, and then we discount the projects that are already constructed. So it's a very fair way. And obviously, we were in some serious negotiations with these agreements, and so the developers thought it was palatable and fair as well. So this is a snapshot of, again, Southern Newcastle County. These are the price per unit for single-family detached, attached, and multifamily. You can see that they are pretty reasonable and fair for this particular TID. One thing that to be aware of is that every TID is going to be different. The amount of infrastructure needs, the cost of those needs is going to be different. The available land, and then what's our ability to draw funds from those developments is going to be different. And so in this particular case. You'll see that we're in about the $2,500 to $4,000 range for a single family. You'll see two columns. One is a the one on the left is a is if you pay per section, like if you make a lump sum payment for a for your whole development. On the right, we charge a 5% service fee if you do it by lot. So a lot of developers are doing it different ways. Like the main developer might pay the full fee right up front. And we have some developers that are assigning that the fee to the actual house builder, the home builder. And so they are paying per building permit as they pull building permits. So different developers have done it different ways. And we allow that flexibility within that overall agreement so that they can do it the best way that fits them.
How does this currently compare to what you do today? I guess what I mean by that is let's say that we have a 100 home community as an example, and single family detached. And I know that planning and zoning makes their recommendations. Let's just say we vote on it, and then they have to go to you to get the sign off, and you guys negotiate what will they pay for the improvements for that community. The question is. And you may not be able to give me the answer this moment, but I would be very curious to know what is it, because you already do this somewhat now. Maybe it doesn't. It's not calculated as per unit.
Right.
It's a different approach. So
but I would be curious to compare what you've been doing as it relates to what's on this paper today.
It'd be difficult to quantify, but I mean, we can try to do what it would look like if it was in the TID and what it would look like outside the TID. But it really depends on the conditions on what we would require a developer to do.
What this does is it provides consistency across
Correct.
The TID.
Sure.
Because what you have now is that somebody will come in, they'll be assigned the lion's share of the improvement. They'll have to invest over and above these rates. The next guy that comes in gets the benefit of the capacity that they just created. And so when we do the traffic analysis and say, what are we trying to fix? Oh, it's already fixed. You don't have to do anything. Except build your entrance. So
right.
They're going to be at a much lower rate. So what this does is it really just balances the playing field within the TID. It makes everything predictable and consistent. So everybody is paying the same.
And that's one of the complaints that we continue to hear from developers.
Right.
And along with that, does this take into account, because I know right now there are some communities that the developers choose to go private roads, i.e. they're maintaining, or some choose to go public, i.e. you're maintaining and you own them. How does this play out in those decisions?
So it really doesn't impact those decisions. So the infrastructures and the things that we'll be developing in the capital transportation plan for the TID are all going to be on those roads that DLDOT already maintains and owns. So it's that local infrastructure that we're going to be looking to grow up. Within the subdivision itself, those roads can either be state or private.
So this is not really relevant to anything other than
kind of the off-site improvements.
Gotcha. So it's not from within the community, it's from outside of the community that this is how it's going to impact outside of the community.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess conversely, as you said a while ago, the same thing could work that a developer could come in and want to build something and it doesn't require any additional monies. And down the road, and this guy comes along, and now those two together have put more traffic out there. The second guy gets stuck with the whole bill. Or
yes.
The third guy gets stuck with the whole bill.
Mm-hmm. It could work in that scenario.
It could build that the first guy is not on the verge of doing anything to require more money from him. Second guy comes in, now the two of them together do. The second guy's going to get stuck with the bill.
Yeah,
that's correct. So the first guy takes up what existing capacity there is, takes it right up to the edge, and then anybody after him is paying.
They ain't got to pay anything. They pay it all.
Right. Correct. So what this does is, again, levels the playing field.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Makes sense.
Keep it moving.
Well, no, because this actually, why create the TID? Just like you said, it's a comprehensive infrastructure planning, which we've been definitely lacking in this area. The TID projects will move much faster in our CTP, which means that we'll get delivered faster. One of the things that we heard from this council adamantly was that the TID fees will stay local, and that's another benefit. Again, equitable treatment of the competing developers so that, Mr. President, the exact scenario that you just said doesn't happen, because quite frankly, it's not It's not always fair. Again, the developing community is attractive to them because they know the cost going in. And then expedited development reviews in our shop, which also makes project delivery quicker. So I know we've been talking about this for quite a while, but we do have a few asks of today. We just want to make sure that we can get a consensus from this council that the boundaries shown here are acceptable based on all of the work that we've done over the last few months. Again, keeping Lewis separate on their own. We need your input on the draft standards that we provided, as well as that parcel-based forecast for land use projections from your Planning and Zoning Commission. And if we're all on board with that, then we're ready to go.
Questions of council?
Yeah.
Mr. Cole.
Just as we are going now into our land use plan, and we see this map you've got there, addressing, we got setbacks were required from the roadways, and like Old Landing Road, I don't know what the setback is off that, but maybe we should be making them greater as we move forward, because to widen any of these roads, and we currently have so much development so close, there's very little room. So maybe we ought to learn from that. But so, I mean, would that be something we should be looking at, greater setbacks on our major roadways? And even these county roads, which are, nobody really thought Old Landing Road would maybe get that kind of congestion, but you can see without any shoulders, it's a problem. Let's see, I got here. Not only in the TID, we ought to learn from this. Maybe we ought to address greater setbacks from roadways throughout the county, because it's going to continue, as everybody predicts, throughout areas. And it would also be, a savings to the taxpayer, where we don't have to acquire these expensive easements later on and move houses and stuff like that.
Yeah, we would still pay fair compensation for the land, but if we don't have to relocate anything, then
right. That's I saw Route 26 project. It's just a very expensive project just to get the easement. So again, we ought to, as we go to the land use plan, we ought to look at that. But the other thing is, we just were talking about that a week or so ago with our land use little workshop. The TID and the environmentally sensitive developing district kind of overlap here a little bit. And is a TID going to encourage the developers come in thinking they're going to get greater densities? Because it's in a TID, but then if it's in these environmentally sensitive areas, obviously greater density is not environmentally sensitive. So it seems to me that could be problematic as we move forward, maybe with this TID and the way we address the environmentally sensitive developing district. And I don't know how, Janelle and all of them are listening, but that we need to have some clear direction, both of us, what our expectations are and the developers who might be listening here today.
So to that point, when we look at what we want that future land to be, we can say that I only want,
Okay, but I'm just
dwelling
I just
for
know
5
that,
acres or right. however you see that growing up. So we can obviously we want to take into account all of those things, mm-hmm. The environmentally sensitive areas, the setbacks from the natural areas that then would reduce the developable land. All that is the analysis that Janelle and her staff are going to have to go through to be able to say, what are these properties going to yield, what is their potential yield, what is the potential use, and then come up with that plan.
Okay, that's just
on the first note. I would definitely support anything that you could do, especially on major arterials and collector roads to increase setbacks.
I go by and see some of the older subdivisions we approved, and the backs of the houses or whatever are directly right up on the roadways, and you either got to buy people's backyards to make these roads, or sometimes move buildings. So, again, in new development, not existing stuff, but anything newly developed, we ought to be looking at greater setbacks everywhere, probably.
And within the TID, we'll know what that is. So we'll know what the road cross-section, what the road elements need to be based on that. So then it's very
especially
very,
in a TID, I would think we would.
At that point in the TID.
We should address it there.
Mm-hmm. More questions of council?
I got just a couple comments.
Burton.
And I want to thank you two. Yeah, it's been a problem my whole life. The Mr. Lawson and I went up and met with these two and spent a couple, 3 hours trying to really try and figure this out. And because it's a big deal, and you know what works in Middletown may not work here, and so we got to figure that out. And but so we met and went to TID school, and it was enlightening. And then what I thought you guys just winged it all the time was a really good report.
He didn't mean anything.
And nothing personal there. But this is really good. I mean, this, if you spend some time looking at the amount of data that's gone into this, it's a eyes wide open deal. I mean, it's all right here to make a decision on. And I really thank your staff for that, because that was just excellent. And then I kind of wrote up just some pros and cons for me, and you addressed a lot of them, but I just want to just review is that, so money's paid in by the developers, so 9 month on the job interview that I just went through, it seems like that's an echoing thing, right? So the developers are going to add to this, the state's going to match it, and the improvements are going to be done in that area. That's the overall concept of the TID. So, you know, the pros are is that everybody knows what's going to happen right there, right? And then I guess the con would be is you got to accept that everything's going to happen right there, right? So if the number's right, then
they'll go there.
And that's the overall goal, right? Stop sprawl by encouraging development in that area, right?
Mostly.
Okay. And so I think that that's worth really hammering out, because I think we got to do something. And I kind of like this.
Mm-hmm. More questions to council?
One last question, Mr. President, and that would be when, because it's to me it's just really important to make sure we have the public input. So what point will we begin that process?
Well, keep in mind our recommendation was that you take a look at your Planning and Zoning Commission would take a look at our draft standards and go through the public process in that mechanism and then make recommendations to you guys.
Sure.
And we would be holding hands the entire time.
Okay. Any more questions?
What would be the timeline, you think? Sorry. So it's you think that Planning and Zoning and Janelle's group can get this done in 90 days and then?
That, I believe that was a commitment issue.
Got a head nod back there.
No pressure.
What would be your goal? What would be your dream deadline to make it with public input, planning and zoning, everything?
After the three.
Yeah, once we get those land use numbers, then we have to update the model. We have to add all those trips onto the system and determine the impacts to those system, to the transportation system. So that's about a 2 month effort to figure out what the roads are going to grow up to be. And then we've got about a 6 month effort, of which some of that time can be overlapped with the 2 months to determine to do all the concept design. So this is the concepts for all the roads. So it's lanes, it's shoulders, it's sidewalk, it's determining right-of-way impacts, utilities, utility impacts, and then doing the fine, or at least to that concept level, a fairly detailed engineering estimate so that we can get overall costs. So that's about a six-month effort on top of that. And then it's working at that point on the fee structure, which could take another month or so to work that out, depending on how many people we want to get involved. As soon as we start getting some indications about the level of the road improvements and those types of things, I mean, we can kind of look ahead as far as we can to do as much work concurrently as we can, but understanding that there still is a critical path. I mean, we can't determine the fee structure until we know, you know, what the overall costs are going
to
be.
But just to clarify, we're still moving forward on the projects. You know, 24 is a perfect example. We're still moving forward on those two major projects going on in that area while we're doing all of this. It's not like we're not going to be doing anything while we're doing the data crunch on the back end.
So we're a year out from agreeing to everything, public input, numbers, planning and zoning, everything.
That's a fair estimate, yes.
And what can be done with the development that could or should or might occur between now and the end of that year or the beginning of that year?
Our current rules would still apply. So they'd have to, depending on the size, they would still have to go through our process.
Right.
Okay.
So nothing is stopping. I just want to make that very perfectly clear. Nothing is stopping during this process. Again, we want to do this, and we want to do it right so that we're set between now and 2040. But we will keep moving forward with all the projects that are currently in our CTP. And I know we also want to time this so that when we do have projects ready to go for this TID, that it coincides with our CTP planning process, which is a continuing year-long, six-year-long process.
Okay, thank
you. One of the things that we did, Councilman Burton, is in Southern Newcastle County was we allowed development to move forward and actually get recorded while we were still in this negotiation process trying to figure out the overall fees. And then we had an agreement with the county that if those developments wanted to come into the TID and kind of rewrite their obligations so they no longer have to fix intersection XY and pay for a signal over here and do this widening, they would just and sign an agreement and pay the fee. And so many of those re-recorded their plans to absolve themselves from all those off-site obligations and invested and signed on to the TID. And so they were, you know, so they were able to move forward, and we were still able to kind of maintain the integrity of what we had put so much work into, getting them on board and more comprehensively doing the road improvements, because they do a spot over here, a spot over here. We'd rather comprehensively improve the whole road while we're doing it.
Good deal. Thank you.
More questions to council?
On the last page, it does. I'm just concerned about, you want us to call Bill Brockenbrow, but then this guy Thomas Brockenbrow, is that his evil twin brother that we're directed to when we have questions?
He's got a couple of personalities.
I mean, anybody with two names, I'm a little suspicious. Yeah. Could be a sleight of hand trick. Yeah.
Well, we do get double the work out of Bill, so.
Wow.
I don't know.
Any more questions of council?
So to summarize, Mr. President, if
throw
just
in.
For my own from
summarize.
Well, just one more time. So you were asking today what?
Yes. We're looking at a consensus. For now, a consensus on that boundary. The acknowledgement that you'll take a look at the draft service standards through your Planning and Zoning Commission, go through the public process, have the recommendation come to you. Help us with the parcel-based land forecast. That has to come from you, and all of those three things. And again, we'll hold hands the whole way. But I think we're looking for that commitment from council today. Yes, sir.
Thank you,
Mr. Lawson. You have any comments, sir?
Well, that was a wonderful summary. I was prepared to make the same summary. I just want council to be very clear in understanding the obligation and the requirements that. Our agency is asking us to do, and specifically the land use projections, which is probably the next biggest step for us as the land use agency and the authority granted thereof. And I know Janelle was giving a very slightly maybe 3-month. We're gonna use our consultants as well for that project, and that will certainly be a public process whereby we will engage the public in looking at the TID and the land use projections, and then work our way through that, the commission, and then the council with the ultimate authority to approve those land use projections. That really creates the model for which we can then start talking about the funding formula and then the cost share ratio, which is critical in this whole juncture. It's a responsibility that I don't think this county has taken before in projecting land use at this level. So I want to make sure that the council is committed to moving on in that next chapter, because if not, then we're probably halted at that point. So unless I hear otherwise, we're going to keep moving forward.
I just would ask, you know, you mentioned the public comment, you know, through P&Z, but I as a councilman, I'm sure others here too would agree, I just want to make sure we also have the personal one-on-one engagement with the public as it relates to this. I don't want a recommendation from P&Z without me personally having the input from that public.
Certainly.
however, whatever mechanism we do. I don't know if we do a workshop or however we do that, but I don't want P&Z having the public forum. They provide us a recommendation without us having that public forum.
Understood. Yep. The second clarification that I wanted to go over also, in the beginning of the presentation, there was a reference to a second TID and the sewer expansion the county is engaged in right now. It's you're familiar with the 10-mile expansion along Beaver Dam Road, Route 23. That's what we're referencing. It's highlighted here basically below the red area and then east. Drew's kind of pointing out Beaver Dam Road right now. In concept alone, that's what we're looking at. Certainly the investments that the county's making in that area is going to have an impact, and we need to tie those two together. In one of our more recent meetings with DLDOT, it became apparent that seemed like a good path forward. So at some point, we'll pick that up and move forward as well. And lastly, DLDOT brought copies of the latest traffic analysis with you. Those were emailed to you this morning, but we do have paper copies for you in the public. This will be up on our website as well. So once you go through that report, as Mr. Burton referenced, wonderful, wonderful information relating to the traffic system within the proposed boundaries. Thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Anything else from council?
She's got something to say.
I really just 1 second. I just want to really thank this council and Mr. Lawson. This progressive step is a huge breath of fresh air, and I think all your constituencies will agree. So thank you guys for your progressive outlook.
Well, I've heard nobody say anything bad. Nobody's thrown anything. So I'm going to assume we are moving forward.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming down and bringing your staff and both Brockenbells.
Yeah.
Thank you.